Hey, you're in the right spot. Welcome back to Chambers, Changes, and Conversations, where we dive into the people, projects, and partnerships shaping Manatee County. I'm Communications Division Manager Casey Zempel, along with our Director of Government Relations, she is Stephanie Garrison, and today we're going back to school. Our guest has one of the most full-circle stories you'll hear in local leadership. She's walked the halls of Manatee County schools as a student, taught in those same classrooms as a teacher, supported her own children's education as a parent, and now she's leading the district. Please welcome the new superintendent of the school district of Manatee County, Dr. Lori Breslin, to Chambers Changes and Conversations. Welcome.
Thank you for having me here today.
Welcome. Welcome. It's such an honor to have you here today. You have been everywhere, I think.
It has been a whirlwind. It's been just a little bit over a month and absolutely has been an absolute pleasure, but a very busy time.
Well, let's start with that incredible full circle story. You grew up right here in Manatee County. What does that feel like walking back into the classrooms, the schools, and even seeing the teachers that were once your colleagues and maybe even a former teacher?
I think at the beginning of my career, I had that surreal moment where I walked into a school as a teacher instead of as a student, and then sat down the hall when you went for your lunch with the teacher group, and I sat with the teachers who used to be my own teachers. And so I think that first moment was that time that it hit me that my former teachers were now my colleagues. Which was absolutely a benefit for me because they took me under their wing. They taught me the best ins and outs of how to run a classroom and how to really get down to the meat of the learning. And so for every time since then, every different role of experience, it's been a benefit because I've had the support of the history of the School District of Manatee County helping me along the way.
That's amazing. And, yeah. You know, the school district is a large employer here in Manatee County. You have thousands of teachers, faculty members, administration, 50,000 students, right, in our school district?
Over 50,000. If you include our charters, we're closer to 55,000 and still growing.
Wow.
Despite many places around Florida not experiencing the growth, we're still growing here in the school district of Manatee County.
That's and I believe awesome. You are the largest employer in Manatee County?
We are the largest employer, absolutely, over 6,000 employees.
That's awesome. So tell us, how does this personal story and connection to our county shape your leadership here?
I think it just gives it a deeper meaning. Everything I do here is, of course, filled with purpose, and you can have that same purpose whether you grew up here or not. You still feel this connection to your community. But it definitely, for me, has helped just shape who I am as a leader. And I think it's given me a lot of perspective. When I started off, I was a long-term sub in this district. Of course, as you mentioned, I was a student in this district. But one of the most important perspectives outside of my career is that I'm a parent in this district. You know, I have three graduates of this school district and a current student in middle school. And so I face the same challenges and the same rewards as any parent. And I think experiencing that helps me relate more to what all of our parents are facing as the challenges of raising children in a very different world than what we grew up in.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, I have to ask, were you the teacher's pet growing up?
I was not. I was always very quick in my work and always had a book in my bag. I was an avid reader and would get in trouble often for reading. And then I often was tardy to class because I was talking in the hallways. And so, I had my own challenges that my parents had to deal with. And I'm sure they would tell you about that if they were here with us today.
Yeah. And one of your major focus areas, speaking of reading, is early learning and literacy. We've heard that saying, learn to read before you read to learn. Can you talk about the district's efforts to ensure that students are up to par and grade level reading by third grade? And what community partnerships are you guys leveraging to get this done?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, the community partnerships are huge. We are very blessed to have so many partnerships here that care so much about our earliest of learners. And when I say an early learner, I'm talking about from birth forward. And so we do outreach in the hospitals, getting information to parents as soon as we can. And then we just build on that. The SOAR and FOAR program, you know, no pun intended, has absolutely soared. It is a model program. It's received national attention for the work being done for students before they even enter our schools.
Tell us about that. What is the SOAR program for those who might not be familiar?
Absolutely. It's a community outreach program. We do outreach through our public libraries here in Manatee County. We do outreach through the Bishop Museum through a once-a-month program. We just opened our SOAR lab, which is a hands-on experience on the Harley campus that is open to the public, and they can check the website for those open hours. The whole purpose and design behind all of these opportunities is putting literature into the hands of children early, age-appropriate, standards-based, but also working with parents so we can teach the parents, who's the child's first teacher, here are the skills you need to be working with your child on, so that they come to school kindergarten ready. And if we know they come to school kindergarten ready, we know the likelihood of on grade level and third grade, which is a huge focus of ours, is proven. I mean, we have the data to prove that they will reach that third grade reading proficiency level. And then we know if they're on level in third grade, the likelihood of graduating high school is vastly improved. And so the benefits from hitting those early outreach programs is just magnified. And we see that. I mean, this isn't new work. We've been deep into this work for many years now, and we see the rise in third grade. We see the rise in graduation.
That's awesome. And how cool to know that that intervention point, that early intervention point, is where we need to be.
Absolutely. It just can't be understated. Mm. It's so important. Our parents need the tools and the resources. You know, they didn't go to school for education, and we understand that. So by giving them some take-home kits and different resources and saying, here's some activities you could do with your child, they can literally change the trajectory of their child's life.
You know, I'm a mom of four, and I have two second graders. And so because of learning about the school district's efforts here, I'm very, like, interested in particular about their reading level. So we've been, I would say, really focused on that this year. And I'm proud to say they are very good readers. But what would you tell someone like me who's got that seven-year-old who might be a little concerned, and how they might take advantage of some of these resources?
So come out and visit our SOAR lab and visit our program once a month at the Bishop Museum. Go into our libraries for the posted hours that we do special readings. Because not only can you participate in the activities, and of course they're very age appropriate and fun for the children are laughing and enjoying themselves. It is a fun learning opportunity. But you're also getting take-home resources, but you're also getting other connections if you need help beyond just those fun engagement activities. We go deeper, and that's when we share some of our programs, such as our Dive into Reading program that we have in connection with John and Amanda Horn. You know, just one more example of the programs that we can direct parents to if they need even more or looking for more opportunities.
And how much does it cost?
It costs nothing.
So it's
this
free.
This is a service that we offer thanks to the generous community members we have here. We certainly have referendum funds we can use for those efforts. We have generous donors that have helped, and we use those dollars to support learning.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So, thinking back to your days as a child, favorite childhood book ever? What was it?
Oh gosh. So I think back, and I have a guilty pleasure that I still am going to admit to. I love YA literature. So
Ooh.
When I was growing up, I did dig into the classics. I loved Jane Austen.
Oh, yeah.
A good friend of mine who taught with me for years, Michelle McCarthy, laughed at me constantly because I loved Charles Dickens.
Dickens, yeah.
But certainly now when I'm looking for something mindless to read, I'll read a YA novel. Some good, some bad. I used to say, because I taught English and reading, and I taught most of my career in high school, so I used to say, well, I need to read it because I need to know what my students are reading. But I haven't been in the classroom in some years, and I still will pick
you
up
still
a novel.
Like it.
Because it's just, you know, mindless entertainment. And
yeah.
Sometimes when you are running around with four children, running around in a job that can be very demanding, a little mindless reading is a treat to me.
Yeah, okay, so I have to ask, because my daughter loves anime and loves those anime YA books.
Like graphic novels and stuff like that? Yeah,
and I mean, I cannot understand. I'm just do you like that?
The graphic novels are not my thing.
Okay.
My youngest son will read and just dig into them.
What
and,
is that?
And I don't understand it. I don't get it. But certainly, if it's,
get some reading.
It's getting them to read, I'm all for it.
Yep. That's great. That's great.
Something else that has been kind of front and center with the school district is attendance. We know students can't learn if they're not in the classroom. Chronic absenteeism is obviously a national challenge, but it's one that is hitting close to home. What's being done in Manatee County to address this situation?
Absolutely. So we have, you know, two different definitions, those who are chronically absent and then those who are truant. And so chronically absent, you could be absent for any reason whatsoever. You know, maybe you do have excused absences. Maybe your family did a vacation. Truancy is that there's no rhyme or reason, so to speak, of the absences. Either way, we measure it on a constant rotation. We just ended a quarter, and so we take a look and measure our numbers from the previous year. And I'm happy to say that we are seeing some signs of improvement. And how are we getting that improvement? Well, we are certainly working on communication. We work closely with community partners. Beth Duda, Everyday Counts, is a huge campaign that we do every year in the elementary schools. And so just publicizing that work and getting all of our elementary schools involved in that. So part of it is just communicating the expectations when it comes to attendance to students and parents. I mean, obviously, if our elementary students aren't making it into the classroom, it's not a student concern, it's a parent concern that we need to talk to. And then we started beefing up our interventions. And so we do that by using our data to monitor student attendance. We send people to the homes if necessary. Parents can now, thanks to some changes in legislation, we can host virtual meetings with parents instead of just in person, that might work for the busy parent, and really putting in resources and research-based intervention practices to address why a student may not be attending school. Samoset Elementary School just received a grant from SAS for $10,000 for attendance initiatives. And so when you talk to Samoset's principal, Samantha Webb, how are you going to use this money? Sometimes it's an incentive. Sometimes it's some kind of reward for coming to school X amount of days. And sometimes it's to make sure that students have the uniforms they need, the shoes they need, the toiletries they need that might be preventing them from coming to school. And so getting down to each individual student need is part of the intervention process to make sure that students have everything that they could physically need, emotionally need, to show up ready to learn in the classroom each day.
Wow, it sounds like you're really getting to the root cause of why someone is absent from school. And maybe enlighten Casey and I, because I know the way I was growing up, man, unless you had a fever, like 104, you're going to school was my family's mantra. Like you're going, there was
Same.
No missing it, right?
Same.
So tell me a little bit about what we're seeing for those, maybe there's some families like mine that are still doing that, but to educate us, why are kids absent? And what are some things that we see at the beginning of the year that the community should just know about?
Right. So that's part of the question that we have is why aren't students coming? Now, we do know during the pandemic, we heavily messaged, if you're sick at all, slight runny nose, stay home, don't come to school. And so we opened the door to different modes to get learning into homes. And that was, of course, very purposeful and needed at the time. You know, we opened up our online learning programs wider. We put everything online. So children felt like, and parents felt, I could just get the materials and work with my child at home and bring it in, teacher grades it, and it's all well and good. Now, we know that was important for the time, but we also know children didn't learn as well, right? Our data took a dip. Nationally, the data took a dip. And so we have now closed those gaps in the data because we've messaged the importance of coming to school. You will perform academically stronger and be better socially prepared for post-secondary readiness if you're in the classroom. That is what we see from our data. And so just continuing to really hit that message home. And those interventions are designed to to break down at the individual level the obstacles that are keeping someone from coming to school, and then if we can address that, then we see the better outcome for the student.
I love that.
Yeah, and you put an emphasis even on, like, you know, doing home visits, meeting with parents online. Obviously, communication is a top priority, as well as overall, like, transparency.
Absolutely.
What steps, in addition to that, are you taking to ensure parents, teachers, and the community feel informed about ongoing school district initiatives?
Right. So transparency, of course, is always a focal point, and even more so in today's world, because what I find is there's a multitude of modalities for communication, so much that sometimes the communication gets lost. And so we're taking some time to look at our metrics. How are parents accessing information? Are they looking at it through email? Do they prefer our text messages? Do they prefer the phone call? And having conversations using, again, data. I know I sound like a broken record, but it's really important to measure how parents are accessing information. And is it different? You know, I'm a parent, but I am, you know, nearing 50, and we have parents that are 20.
Mm-hmm.
So how I want to receive information is going to be very different than the 20-year-old and how they receive information. So we always have to be timely with our information. We always have to be factual. We need to be prompt in any sort of response for any sort of emergency situation. But then we also have to be strategic and look at our metrics and determine the best mode of communication. And sometimes it's multiple modes so that parents don't feel like they're getting information from third-party sources. Third-party sources sometimes are correct. But oftentimes there's a little layer of confusion in there, and that confusion then causes sometimes chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And then that misinformation becomes the felt reality, even though it's not the reality. And then we go back and try to unpack that information, and we're too late.
Yep.
So if we're timely and relevant and factual and we get it out in multiple modes, then I think our community we'll understand we're doing everything we can to be transparent. We're still going to make mistakes.
Yep.
And we'll own those mistakes and take the feedback and do better next time. But every time that we can be prompt in our responses, then that's what we need to be. And honestly, the communications team is doing a great job taking on that challenge.
Yeah, and in that space, we have Jamie Carson, who is a local regional leader in the communications world. So really, really good hire there.
Absolutely. Yep.
And can I just say, too, I love one of my students, or she, the whole school uses an app for the texting. I love the texting. The texting is so easy.
Yeah.
So please keep texting or using an app to do a text-like thing, because that keeps it quick and on point, and I don't feel like I have to write, "Dear Mrs. So-and-so," you know, and "best regards," and those kinds of things.
I think that's great feedback, and I agree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I'm a mom, but I also work full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And so having those texts helps me keep in touch, because despite working in the school district, it doesn't mean I know everything that is happening in my child's school, and certainly not in the classroom, unless that communication is coming to me.
Yeah, and you know, another thing that maybe this is, again, just as a parent of multiple kids, maybe you've experienced this too. Sometimes I get message and I'm like, I don't know which kid you're talking about.
Right.
Because it's an email, and I don't, and, you know, some of the middle schoolers, they have multiple teachers, can't keep track of them. I'm like, are you talking about my daughter, my son? Sometimes they've shared teachers. So I would just say anything you can do to make it clear, transparent of which child you're referencing for this busy mom.
I never even thought of that. I got one kid, so I know,
who
it's directed at.
Right. I've said it multiple times. Which kid of mine are you talking about?
Right. I need more information here. What school, which kid?
Yeah.
And something I've heard you speak publicly about, Dr. Breslin, is the website. Could you tell us a little bit about your sites on the website and maybe some things that you're thinking about?
So our website was recently relaunched this year, and we hope that that is a good mode for all of our community members to go to. In fact, we are in the middle of rezoning, and rezoning does not work without feedback. And so we're getting ready to roll out what we hope is our final draft maps for the public to see. All of that's going to be posted on our website. We'll share it with our board in this month coming up on an October 31st board workshop. We'll unveil the maps. We'll post them on our websites. But using our website to help better communicate information when we're talking from a district level, a lot of our social media postings will be linked on the website as well to help drive the traffic there. But then how do our schools use the website to really be informative? I will go on sometimes and sneak around on the website. It's not really sneaking, but digging around on there to see if I can easily access information. And if I can't access it, then I bring it back to the team and say, I can't easily find this as a parent. If I can't find it, I'm sure other people are struggling.
Yeah.
So it's one of those additional ways we're just constantly looking at methods to improve the information that we're providing to the public.
So you mentioned the big topic, so yes. We're going to go there now. Yes. Since you mentioned rezoning, you said the 31st, you're doing something on Halloween for kids.
Absolutely. It's daytime during our board meeting, but the board members will have an opportunity to review the map, give their feedback, give their comments. But we're opening two elementary schools this fall. As I said before, we're still growing as a school district. So we have Rye Ranch. We have an elementary school to be named near Artisan Lakes, and they will both be opening in fall 2026 with the addition of the Harvey Upper Campus and Lake Manatee that opened this past fall. We had to do some rezoning. And so the rezoning is district-wide. You can see a distinct population shift with our students from West Manatee County to East Manatee County. I mean, I think everyone is aware of that. So how do we make sure we're not overcrowded in one section of the county and under capacity in another? And so that's by shifting slightly. We really tried to minimize impact, but we can't hide that there will absolutely be needed impact. But the things that we're doing to help eliminate any confusion or stress on families is getting the information out. We will have posted after October 28th, we will post a timeline of community events on our website. We'll have a virtual link that you can also access a meeting if you can't make it in person. And then we will also have a link where you could provide feedback should you look at the map and you have some comments as a parent or community member that we need to consider. Our plan is to do final approval of the maps on or about December 9th, depending on when the board schedules the December meeting. And that would be in time to open up school choice in January. Because, of course, if a parent doesn't choose to go to their zone school, doesn't choose to send their student to their zone school, there is school choice. And we're trying to make sure that every school has an opportunity and room in their capacity for some school choice options. The website will also have an FAQ section to help navigate the process as well. So trying to think of every way, shape, or form to make what is a difficult process a little less difficult for our families.
And so what does that look like after? So after the board approves the final plan, what is then the next step? Just implementation?
Yes, doing a huge community outreach, making sure that all families understand where their current zone is. And then we launch our school choice window. And so any parent that isn't happy with their zone, there is that opportunity for school choice. That will open up in the spring. Families are notified prior to the end of the year. And then we move forward with the opening of two schools in the fall. And then a new high school is scheduled to be opened in 2027 out east as well. And that new high school zone won't take effect until the year 2027 because, of course, we need the new school before it takes effect. But we'll go ahead and launch the communication of the zones at the same time so parents can see the high school zones, even though that will be a year delayed as we're waiting for the new build to happen.
So that high school is opening for fall of 27?
It's slated for fall of 27.
Wow.
Right.
Have they started building?
They have not done any groundbreaking yet, but they assure me that it's on track.
I have seen Lake Manatee was built in what looks like record time, and what a beautiful school.
It's absolutely, absolutely gorgeous. The upper campus at Lake Manatee, of course, it's a K-8 campus, so the upper campus will open in this next year, and then it will eventually roll up through K-8, and actually pre-K through 8. Don't want to forget our littles on there
as well. Yes, yes. So in this, just one more thing on rezoning, it sounds like the website is the source for the information. We'll link to that as well. How can parents, let's say they've got the resources on the website, how can parents get in touch? What's your preferred direction for how people should send their thoughts, their comments, their questions?
So on the same webpage, you'll see a link for Let's Talk. And Let's Talk is a tool that we use, and we use it for any type of feedback. If you're on our website and you're not sure who to ask what question to, you can send it to Let's Talk, and it will get routed to the appropriate person, appropriate department. So all of our feedback will go through Let's Talk, and it allows us to really measure, again, the metrics of the communication. So we have good information on not only the content of the message, mm-hmm. but how many people have said a similar comment on that message.
I love how data-driven you are, and you're thinking about communications from all modalities that people see them. So it's really reassuring, and I've seen you talk about this multiple times, and for me that's reassuring to know that you're looking at this from a holistic point of view, but also taking, you have the data to be able to go to the individual questions as well.
Absolutely. If we're missing the mark, mm-hmm. our data will show that. We don't have to wait for someone to make a concern mm-hmm. or to show frustration. We should be able to measure that and see it and react. And so it's just being more reactive mm-hmm. in this world where there's data everywhere. So how do we use it to our advantage?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And let's shift gears a little bit. Something that always sparks excitement within myself too, and I know Stephanie, you're mm-hmm. always excited about innovation, technology. The district has place a strong emphasis on STEM and career and technical education, or CTE, courses at the high school level, along with a variety of extracurricular activities, including a very active robotics program. I've seen the moving robots
yes.
in videos. It's awesome. What steps are the school district taking to engage students at an even younger age to inspire that next, you know, generation of thinkers and doers?
Absolutely. And so, of course, we know that the jobs of tomorrow haven't even been imagined yet, right? So really the key to that is preparing students to be problem solvers and critical thinkers. And so they'll be prepared for whatever the career world looks like once they reach that age. And so we start early. When you start with the pre-K, you have the maker spaces, right? They're doing interactive activities. When you go to the SOAR lab, they're doing 3D printing at that early age. And then you work your way through. We have STEM classes on every elementary campus. I mean, we compete regularly in those STEM competitions at the state and national level because we really are that ahead of everyone else. And this was work performed way before I stepped into this role. I mean, this is the great people that came before me, you know, your Doug Wagners of the world who put a lot of this work in. And then you move in through middle school, and we do have our robotic programs. We try to vary them from campus to campus. You know, we have our Guy Harvey initiative through elementary at Anna Maria, at King Middle School, then Manatee High School. Well, yes, it's about Guy Harvey's work and preservation and a healthy environment and marine science. But there's also a lot of technology in there. Your underwater drones, the building of the underwater robots, that's all part of that. So we try to lace it in every sort of activity. I was meeting with Dr. Gansmer. He's our head of our CTE programming here in the district. We met this morning and talked about MTC and the outreach. As you know, traffic has built up in our community. As our community has grown, how do we make MTC accessible across our entire county? And so we're talking about webbing out outreach programs so we can offer additional classes. We just had the board approve two programs at Palmetto High School and Bayshore High School for construction pre-apprenticeship programs.
Awesome.
That's great.
Right. So all of those are now outreaching to other areas that north of the river, West Manatee, that is a little bit drier right now when it comes to those really engaging CTE type programs. And so we're enriching programs there. So MTC is flourishing.
Tell us about MTC.
Packed.
We haven't talked
yeah,
much about, I know,
not at all.
This is a huge gem of
yes.
the community that some people may not know about. So what's the school district's relationship with
right.
MTC?
So Manatee Technical College, and it is just that. It's a post-secondary, is its main purpose. And you can do programs from HVAC to construction. My son, Colin, is starting fire college and EMT school through MTC in January.
Auto mechanics.
There's auto mechanics. There's cosmetology. I mean, it is just a massive offering. But the great thing is you can start those offerings while you're still in high school.
Wow.
And so we have many high school students that will spend part of their day on their high school campus and part of their day on the MTC campus. And by doing some outreach programs, you know, establishing a little more choices on our Bayshore High School campus for MTC, that will enable students to take their high school classes and start their MTC classes as well without having to fight the traffic down to get to State Road 70. MTC is thankfully pretty centrally located, but we need some outreach programs as well. Another example is Parish Community High School and their automotive program. Those students who participate in that program often receive job offers before they graduate high school. Awesome. You know, we work with our business partners. They tell us what the needs are for our community, and then we're able to bring those programs and the education, and then they're ready to hire our students right out of the programs.
You know, Casey's a father of a high schooler. We've talked about how important graduation is. And the school district has done a lot of good and a lot of improvement with our high school graduation rates, but I know there's still work to be done. So could you talk a little bit about high school graduation and what work is there now?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, a lot of intervention work has been done. We really turned up the heat the past couple years to make sure that we were addressing every individual student obstacle that was getting in the way of their post-secondary preparedness, and then making sure they were ready to graduate. So we look at graduation as, you know, you have two metrics. You have your graduation rate, and I'm now happy to say we are neck and neck with the state, but we're not stopping. We're still pushing above because our goal is, of course, always 100%, and we'll always try to attain that number. But as we're working on that, we also have to work on post-secondary readiness. And so I mentioned MTC, but we also have strong partnerships with USF. And SCF, very excited about SCF's upcoming groundbreaking for North of the River, because those are opportunities for us to get our students involved early when they're still in high school in these post-secondary classes. In addition to AP, IB, and ACE courses, which of course are phenomenal opportunities, mm-hmm. we have to offer courses in early college coursework through USF and SCF and MTC, so that our students feel that they're earning their high school diploma and they already have one step forward into their next step in life. And so if every student graduates high school, that's fantastic. But if they don't have a post-secondary plan, not as good.
Yeah.
Then what are they doing? And we don't want that. I know parents don't want that. And so we have all of these partnerships that help pull our students into those different options. So we have a high graduation rate and post-secondary readiness, and that's just enriching our community.
Yeah, and I think I saw the data. Was it 88% or 89%?
Well, if you round up, it's 89%. So we're right about 89%. And then we started this fall. We measure each individual senior, and we look at who might be at risk for not graduating. And so we started this fall with less seniors at risk for not graduating than we did last fall.
That's great.
So we're very confident we'll supersede that 89% and pull up beyond that.
So what is the big picture? All the skilled trade opportunities that kids have in high school, all the technological and kind of forward-leaning programs that you guys are offering, what kind of an impact is that making with, like, local employers?
So from what we can see, the local employers are plucking our students up as soon as they finish their programming. MTC had their advisory breakfast, I think that was Monday this past week, and it was a packed house representing all forms of industry in our district. And the reason they're there at 6:45 on a Monday morning is because they know if they invest their time, and that's what they're doing. They're there advising our programs. This is what we need. If you could teach your workers this, they'll be at an advantage to hire. And so we work very closely with our businesses to find out what they need so we can then educate our students because it's a win-win. It's a win for our students, and it's a win for our businesses here. I mean, they're able to find employees, highly qualified employees, right in town. And that, of course, keeps our community growing.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, we talk about how Manatee County is still growing when a lot of other counties are not. And I think it's because many factors, but one of those is that we are constantly feeding in to the growth and keeping our talent here as much as we possibly can.
Yeah. Now, we've talked about the one end of education here in the school district. What about the VPK? And for our earliest learners, tell us about what's the current state of VPK in Manatee County?
So we have 112 VPK classrooms that are district-run classrooms. And those could be what we call EPK. They could be support for 3- and 4-year-olds that need a little extra early start. Or it could be VPK, which is 4 and up. Of course, the state helps to fund half-day VPK, and then we offer wraparound services. Awesome. Families can pay for the afternoon care. For our Title I schools, we pay for afternoon wraparound services for all Title I schools through Title I dollars, because we know it's that important for those early literacy skills. But we also partner with the Early Learning Coalition, and we work very hard with all private providers, whether that be a private daycare or maybe a church preschool. And the reason we do that is so we can share the standards of learning as prescribed by the state to all of our private providers. So we know that students are accessing standards-based learning in those courses. I say courses, but it's preschool classrooms in the form of play. So they come in kindergarten ready. Our preschool data is now measured through the state, and we have received excellent reviews on the majority of all of our programs by the state's rating, and really putting us up as one of the top districts statewide.
That's awesome.
And we're just going to continue to see those benefits feed in down the road.
Yeah, all of my children went to preschool, and it made a tremendous difference to prepare them for big school and kindergarten, right?
Yes.
Could you talk to, what would you say to parents who are maybe on the fence, not sure, because there is a lot of conversation now, are they better at home longer? Is this pushing them into the system too soon? What would you say to them about considering a VPK program?
Right. So predominantly this morning, I've mentioned academics and literacy, which is, of course, very important, but it's also socially. Having the social skills is really important. And if you start that early, then when your child does start kindergarten, there usually is less signs of just stress and all the emotion that comes with starting kindergarten. And I can remember, my oldest is 22. I very clearly remember the struggles of starting kindergarten. So the earlier you can get them in socially is a benefit. But you don't have to go full day. So I would encourage any parent that's a little bit nervous about starting full time, the answer is you have choices. Mm-hmm. You can do a half a day, Monday through Friday. You could do days like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Now, our programs, and we ask all parents to come Monday through Friday for the half day at least. But there are private providers. I know that there's less options sometimes north of the river. They're building the child care centers as fast as they can to match the population growth. But there are still options out there. And if they can't find an option, then I encourage them to try the school district and try that half day approach. And they may find it's the balance that works for their family.
Oh, and that sound means we have reached our lightning round. Dr. Lori Breslin, world famous lightning round here. No overthinking, 6 simple questions.
Okay.
First thing that comes to your mind, okay? World famous lightning round. Dr. Lori Breslin, here we go. You're a proud Gator, so favorite UF tradition or game day memory?
Well, I'm going to say tradition, but even though it's more recent, is the Tom Petty, we won't back down
now
at the end of third quarter. It wasn't there when I was a student, but so glad they added it. It's a special moment, especially for a night game.
Great song.
That's awesome. Growing up with brothers probably meant you had to learn how to hold your own early on. How did those experiences shape your leadership approach and the way you handle challenges now?
Oh, absolutely. Middle child, 2 brothers, and mom of 4 boys. And I think it's absolutely helped me because oftentimes when you're in any situation, you're able to adapt to the room and be able to handle it, whether you're in a room with all males or all females. You just have the ability to figure out what the audience needs and be able to supply that.
Coffee, how do you take it?
Latte hot from Starbucks is my guilty pleasure.
All right. And I'm sure you do a lot of driving between schools. What's in the earbuds? Podcast, audiobooks?
Audiobooks, podcast, leadership books, and sometimes just some great music to listen to as well.
Okay. If you could take a field trip anywhere in Manatee County as a student or superintendent, where would it be?
Well, I'm going to have to say the SOAR Lab.
Okay. There you go.
You can go and engage in hands-on activities. There's even a room that if you need a little relaxation, the lighting and the music and the activities are designed to calm in that room. And who doesn't need that in their life?
That's awesome. And favorite field trip food, Lunchables with a carton of milk or PB&J and a juice box?
I do love some PB&J.
Dr. Buzzin, thank you so much for taking the time to share your vision and all the great things that you guys are doing at the school district. Very inspiring to see somebody that kind of grew up in this area and is using exactly what made her to continue to contribute to what we see coming out of the school district.
It's such an inspiration. And I just want to say, I'm so proud to send my kids to school here in Manatee County. This is an incredible place to be educated, to grow up. The teachers care so much. I know people, I mean, I came here, I chose Manatee County to live here. And one of the biggest reasons was knowing that the schools were so good and the teachers cared so much. So just a shout out to all your staff, all the faculty. They are incredible.
They are. Our teachers are top notch. If we take care of our teachers, I know our kids will soar. And I thank you so much for saying that and recognizing the hard work that they do every day. And a shout out to our principals. It's Principal Appreciation Month. And so thank your principal today.
Thank you, principals.
Thank you, principals. And thank you for tuning in to another episode of Chambers Changes and Conversations. Be sure to listen to all of our past podcasts and subscribe anywhere where you find great podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. We're on every single platform there is. And be sure to share, like, comment, contribute. We want to get this thing out there to as many people as possible. From the county seat and on behalf of the men and women doing work that matters behind the scenes for you, I'm Casey Zempel.
I'm Stephanie Garrison.
And I'm Lori Breslin.
Make it a great day to live, work, and play
in Manatee County.
The opinions expressed by guests of Chambers Changes and Conversations do not necessarily reflect those of Manatee County government or its employees.